All right. Good evening. Parsha Shmos. I always lament leaving Sefer Bereishis as someone with a master's in social work and an interest in the world of psychology. Sefer Bereishis is one of the more fascinating texts to read in terms of trying to understand human beings, especially the way God wanted us to understand how individuals deal with the everyday struggle to be human and to be a God-fearing person, which are two things that I really aspire to be human and to be God-fearing. And yet, right when we leave Sefer Bereishis, within the first few psukim of Sefer Shmos, we see Vayamas Yosef v'cholecha v'choladorahu. We stop talking about individuals, that whole generation, everything that we were doing until now, we stop, and now we focus on, with the exception of a few, of Moshe, Aaron, and a few others, we really talk about a nation. Ironically, I'm not going to discuss the topic of a nation now. Luckily, it's the theme of basically most of the Sefer, so we will have plenty of time to get to it. But what I've been trying to do this year, and I've done in previous shirim this year in our Chassidus and the Parsha series, is focus in on the lesser told stories in the Parsha, the ones that usually we tend to overlook or to skip over in favor of the stories that get more attention, that are more famous or well-known or easier to find the meaning in. And yet, there are these stories that God decided this story should be in it, just like the famous story should be in it. And every pasuk, every letter is meant for us to really focus on the depth of what of the meaning of that story, of that idea, of that message. And I, Baruch Hashem, I found one in this week's parsha, towards the beginning, and it's the story of the Mialdot HaIvriot, I believe they're called the wet nurses or the nurses of the Jewish babies. Those that assisted in delivering the Jewish children who lived in Mitzrayim. And as the Torah describes, their names were Shifra and Pua. You may have already heard in the Medrash that these two people, according to the Medrash, they are actually Yocheved and Miriam, the mother and sister of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what's interesting is they were told, they seem to have been employed by Paro, by Mitzrayim, to be the nurses for the Jewish mothers, and they were told to kill the boys that were born at the moment of birth to somehow see to it that they don't survive childbirth. And he first told them to do it in a more discreet way because it was not uncommon for a child to not make it through the birthing process. And therefore for him to tell them to try to kill the boys as childbirth is taking place was Paro trying to limit the Jewish population subtly, not blatantly, but subtly. And as we see, we're going to get to in source number one, they wouldn't listen to him, and they didn't do what he said, and they gave an excuse. And then that's when he came out with the decree, okay, we're going to be less subtle this time. We're going to throw babies into a river. And that's a bit more extreme and definitely more open. And we see that there is something interesting about this story. If you ask me, but my opinion doesn't really matter when it comes to this, if this whole story didn't happen in the Torah, meaning if it wasn't recorded in the Torah that there are these maidservants and they didn't listen to Paro and instead they let the Jewish people, I don't know how much of the entire big picture I would have lost. We know that there was pain and suffering. We know that Jews were trying to escape discrimination and death. That is clear from the rest of the story. So already from the beginning, and this is why I wanted to look at this story, specifically in this week's Parsha, when there were other more interesting stories, even including the Sneh, the burning bush, is in this week's Parsha, including the process of becoming slaves, including meeting Paro for the first time, or at least a new Paro. This story, the question we need to ask ourselves is, what is it adding? What flavor is it bringing to, and what message is it giving us to help deepen our understanding of our lives and of the story that we are meant to understand and to incorporate into our consciousness as Jewish people? So source number one, I quoted just a few psukim to give us a context of where I'd like to go and what a specific point I'd like to focus on in this story. Shmos Perek Aleph, we start from Pasuk Yud Zayin, a few psukim into the Parsha. Vatir ena hamialdos esalokim. V'lo asu kasher diber alein melech Mitzrayim v'techayena esa yiladim. These nurses, these, what are they called? My gosh, I don't remember. No, the midwives, that's what it is. I kept forgetting that word. Midwives. The midwives feared God. It doesn't mean they saw God, but it's vatir ena in the context, in the root word of yirah, of fear. They feared God, and it seems as a result of their fear of God and their commitment to God, v'lo asu kasher diber alein melech Mitzrayim, that is what motivated them to ignore the command of Melech Mitzrayim, Paro, v'techayana asa yeladim, and they brought to life, or they allowed the male babies to live. Vayikra Melech Mitzrayim lam yaldos. He called them into his office, and he said, "Madua sisan davar hazeh, v'techayin aseyaladim. Why are you doing this and letting them live?" They have a progress report. Let's see how many babies you were able to successfully kill. It says on my report here, zero. How are all these babies living if I told you to not let one child live? V'tomar na hamayaldos aparo. They essentially made up an excuse. These are not like your regular Egyptian moms. These are chayos. These are like wild animals. These Jewish mothers. Already when the midwife enters the room to give birth to the child's already born. Now, if the whole point of Paro's decree was that the child would die in the process of being born, and he didn't want it to seem like they were dying or being murdered, so once the baby's already born, that time frame, that little period of time is over, and they couldn't do it. Vayetev Elohim Elokim Lamialdos, and God saw, he looked favorably upon them. He saw that what they were doing was good. He approved of what they were doing, loosely translated. Vayerev ha'am vayatzmu ma'od, and the nation grew bigger, multiplied, and became very strong. And then the last two psukim, vayihi ki yar'u hamialdos es ha'elokim vayas lahem batim. And here's the pasuk that we're going to talk about. And it was when these midwives feared God, and he made them houses. Just translating literally, Vayas lahem batim, and he made them houses. Vayitzav Paro l'chol amo le'mor kol habin ha'ilod ha'yorot hashlichu, and Paro commanded the entire nation, his nation, meaning the Egyptians. He no longer was dealing with the midwives. He was no longer being subtle. He was being open about it. Murder the Jews, the first real systematic elimination of Jews, as we know it. V'chol habas techayun, and every female, every girl, to be allowed to live. Now that pasuk chavalef, several problems, several issues. Can any of you point out what any issues would be, or what things that catch you off guard in any way? If not, I'll go for it myself. I looked at this already, so I have a head start.
You mean, like, what houses they're referring to? Like,
that's definitely a question. What is that talking about?
Yeah,
he made God made them houses? I mean, that's the second. I already spoiled. I already gave you the second question. Who made houses?
Maybe it's like Hashem preserved them or like gave them safety and security or something. To the midwives, right?
So you're saying God built houses? Because that's mind blowing.
No, not built. I'm saying like.
Vayas, he made.
Gave him security, home, like the essence of a home. Like,
but in what way did he give it to them?
I don't know.
Right, so that's strange. Now, the other point here is that Vayas is not so clear as a pronoun. And he, who is it talking about? Now, the first object in the pasuk is God. These midwives, when they feared God, vayas, and he made. Now, there's another option here. There's only one other male person in this story. It could be Paro. Now, some of Farshim point out, lahem, to them, is actually in the plural male form, because if it would be talking about a group of females, as in the two midwives, or the several midwives, would be lahen, to them, in the female form. So it's not even clear that these houses were built for the midwives. And, but Tim, what do you mean houses? How at all does this have to do? Now, and consider the options. If one realistic option here is that Paro built a group of male people houses, how is that a possible second half of this pasuk? When the Jewish midwives feared God, Paro made them houses. Those guys, houses. Now, there is an explanation for this, if that's one of the options. Some commentaries mention that what he did, since the midwives feared God and therefore allowed the male children to live, he built Egyptian houses in between the Jewish houses. You may have heard the second part of the story. And what happened when Egyptians moved into the neighborhood is they would have kids, and when the kids would cry, their neighbors would hear it, the Jewish neighbors, and the Jewish neighbors' kids would start to cry, and therefore Paro would find out where Jewish kids are and be able to fulfill the very next pasuk, which is finding kids to throw in the river. So one of the real explanations for this pasuk is, as a result of the midwives not listening to Paro but listening to God, Paro was forced to do something about that issue by building houses for the Egyptians so that the Jewish babies would be exposed when they hear crying and start to cry. But even if that's the explanation, that's a stretch, right? You have to really plug in a lot of missing parts to create that story. And there's a rule that I like to employ or use in these types of situations, meaning when there are psukim that are extremely vague, where proper nouns are missing, left and right, where there are really important elements of the story that are left to translation, that usually means that there is some larger message, there's some deeper meaning here that has less to do with the details of this particular event and more to do with what can be extracted from this event in terms of the way it happened or the context. One of my favorite examples is from Parshas Vayishlach, when Yaakov is encountering his brother Esav. Right smack in the middle of the story, as he's leaving with his family, it says he's left alone. Vayivaser Yaakov levado, vayavik ishimo, adalos hashachar. He's left alone. He fights with a dude until the sun comes up. That is that's the worst storytelling. It's just a terrible way to tell a story. You know, everyone has like a friend who doesn't tell stories well. This is a poorly told story. Okay, craziest thing happened. Yaakov left in a place, and then a guy came, and he fought with him. What? Now, there's very, very incredibly deep stuff going on with that story, with the angel of Esav, and this is predicting the end of days, and that's a lot of things. Go look into it if you haven't heard at all what I'm saying. There's a lot of very deep and very far-reaching Torah that is learned from this very vague story. So the same thing could be applied to this story in terms of the fact that this pasuk is very vague and leaves lots of details out. If we're not going with that explanation, that Vayas could be God and Lahem could be referring to the midwives, even if it's said in male form. What are these houses? How does that correlate to the fact that they fear God? I didn't know that God builds houses for people who fear him. I've never heard of such a thing. The other thing that I want to point out is this is the second time already that we mention that these midwives feared God. This is the first pasuk that we talked about in Yud Zayin. It says, "Vatira nahum yadosas Elohim." So we already knew this fact. So why are we repeating this or emphasizing it? It seems the main point of bringing it up again is about the whole houses thing. And it's because of their fear of God that we already mentioned that there are these houses. But it seems to be within a story that, like I mentioned in the beginning, is not so clear how imperative it is, how important, crucial it is to understand the larger context of the exile in Egypt. Within that, there's this very ambiguous line that leaves much to be desired. So, there's a fascinating Degel Machane Ephraim. This is the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. Much of what is written in the Sefer is directly either quoting or things that he learned directly from his grandfather, Baal Shem Tov. This is the essence of Chassidus. I believe I brought up the Sefer previously in a different shiur this year. And if we really want to understand what Chassidic thought is about, this is one of the best places to look. The Degel Machane Ephraim in Parshas Shemos. And he dissects this story and specifically focuses on the pasuk that we mentioned, the difficult pasuk Chaf Aleph. Source number two: Vayhi ki yaru hamialdos esar elokim vayas lahem batim. Now he gives several different explanations. This is just one of them. Yesh lomar bazeh baderech remes. One could say on this pasuk, in the way of hinting or trying to reveal something that's a bit secretive, meaning it's not the regular pshat, the regular understanding of what this story is about. Ki inyan hayira hu shemagbil lechachma al derech mashal bechachma levad. Sorry, one second. Sorry. Ki inyan hayira hu shemagbil lechachma al derech mashal. One of the things that I forgot to mention is that the word yira is employed two times, that I did mention, but in terms of the fact that God chose to describe them as fearing God, as opposed to having faith in God, right? If we would have said that they had lots of faith in God, that also they loved God a lot, there's specifically the attribute of fear that is emphasized here. That needs to be understood. Forget it. Even putting aside the fact that God or someone built someone houses, why is it that there's this heavy emphasis on the attribute of fearing God? So this is what the Degel Machane Ephraim focuses on. Fear, the idea of fear of God is that it is, or fear in general, is that it creates a border or a limit, a limitation to wisdom, to chachma. We'll have to, these are abstract thoughts that we're talking about right now. We'll have to understand, and he explains. Al derech mashal b'chachma levad b'li yira, with wisdom by itself, meaning knowledge, lots of knowledge, without the idea, the attribute of fear coupled with that knowledge. Yachol asos kol harashos v'liyos chas v'shalom chachamim lehara. It enables someone to become extremely evil, and God forbid to use that wisdom for evil. You may have seen, maybe the guys more than the girls in the room, but I won't judge, it's possible, the typical superhero villain type of story, whether it's a cartoon like Inspector Gadget or a Marvel comic or a movie, often, not every time, but often, one of the things that the supervillain is out for is some sort of power that gives them an incredible amount of knowledge. Not necessarily super strength, but knowledge. The ability to know everyone's thoughts or to control everyone's thoughts or some sort of power that has to do with knowledge. Why? Because knowledge is a very powerful thing. It can be used to outsmart people, to devise plans and strategies because of a tremendous amount of wisdom that can bring them more wealth, more power, that can oppress people that are less wise, that are not as smart. And therefore, without fear, and we'll talk about what fear is and how it works in this equation, that amount of that knowledge, which is not necessarily objectively a bad thing, but it can be used for tremendous evil. Ach al yidei hayira, but through yira, through fear or awe, na'ase gvul l'chachma, it creates a boundary to wisdom. Shelo yachnis chachma so b'davar zeh rak b'torah, so that one's wisdom, in the context of a Jew, one's wisdom will not be used for anything but for Torah. Va'avoda. Sorry, I underlined that last word by accident. Nimtza, what do we find? Hayira osa gvul v'kli l'hachachma shelo titbashet yoter midai. Yira creates a boundary and creates a vessel that chachma can be placed in, that wisdom could be in, so that it doesn't expand to be too great. As if to say that too much knowledge is not good for you. And yira, fear of God, contains that knowledge to be the proper amount, and it conceals it within a vessel. It's as if there's a huge bottle with a cap on it, and knowledge goes in it, and it's concealed within it, and you put a cork in it so that it doesn't get too, it doesn't expand to be too much. V'cheinu b'chol ha'olamos, ki chulam b'chach ma'asis, v'hayarotza l'espasha yoter midai, ad shagar b'hem ha'kadosh baruch hu, v'zeu b'chinas yira shehu tzimtzum u'gvul. Now this whole idea of yira being a kli, a way of housing or containing wisdom, is based on one of the more famous ideas in Kabbalistic thought. In Kabbalistic thought, there is the different spheros, and two of the most famous spheros are Ahava and Yira, or really Chesed and Gvura, are the two spheros. Chesed being kindness or giving, and Gvura being strength. Now, these two spheros have very specific attributes to them. Chesed being kindness, where it's going outward, it's expanding, it's always being active and going forward to do. Whereas Gvura, as opposed to what the average person thinks about when they contemplate what Gvura is, which is strength and power, Gvura in the Kabbalistic sense is holding back. Gvura is self-control, is being able to retract or retreat inwards. And that's the attribute of Gvura. So there's one attribute of God that is constantly going out, there's one that's going in. That is also paralleled by the attributes of Ahava, of love. When you love something, you move towards it, you move outwards, you feel like you want to do more. Love doesn't cause you to crawl up into the fetal position in your basement. Love wants you to just run through the hills and climb a tree and yell, "I'm king of the world," on a boat and things like that. Yira, good 90s reference. Yira does cause you to move back, to retreat, to escape, right? To hide away. It's the idea of containing oneself, as opposed to moving out, moving inwards. If you plug that back into this equation, yira is something where you may have something else that's pushing it, trying to push it out, and yira is something that pushes it back to where it should be. So we have this thing of chachma, which doesn't necessarily move one way or another, unless we want it to, wisdom, acquiring knowledge, and it seems like there is a certain point where acquiring knowledge can be a bad thing, or if you have a lot of it without containing it, it could be a very bad thing. And what is the element in our life that could contain knowledge? That is your fear of God, that helps us contain it. We're still very abstract, which is fine. We'll try and bring it to more practical terms once we continue forward. Now, I mentioned quickly the next line in the Degel Machane Ephraim, which he quotes actually from a Gemara, which is a fascinating thought in source number 4 and 5 that I want to jump to because it's a fascinating Gemara. And it's a Rav Tzedek HaKohen that explains it that I love. Here's the Gemara. Go to source number 4. This is what the Degel Machane Ephraim just quoted. V'hainu d'amar Reish Lakish, mai dechsiv, ani keel shakai, ani hu shamarti la'olam dai. What does it mean when it says, ani, God is saying, ani keel shakai, and I am God, the name, one of the names of God is Shin Dalet Yud Shakai. What does it mean? It's as if God is saying, ani hu shamarti la'olam dai. I am the one who said to the world, die, enough. By itself, it's kind of a strange thing. What does it mean he said to the world enough? Now, this is referring to the creation of the world. The name of God, Shin Dalet Yud Shaddai, is the attribute that reminds us that God said to the world, die. Shin, she'amar, le'olam, die. What does that mean? Amar Reish Lakish, b'sha'a shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu es hayam. At the moment when God created the waters of the sea, on the second side of the page, the waters would expand outwards and continue, seemingly in kind of an unlimited, without having any boundary, without having any way of stopping it. Ad shaga'ar bo HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yavsho. Until God sort of like scolded it and dried it up. Shenemar gar bayam v'yavasheu v'chol hanaros hechriv. Now, this is a very weird image, if you think about it. It's like God created water. The waters were going outwards in the world. And it seems like, and it's hard to understand, but this is definitely the impression that I get, it was as if they were going beyond the control of God or beyond what God had in mind for the waters to do. And it was as if God had to say, uh-oh, I have to put a stop to this. So he stopped the waters in their tracks and he dried it up, and that's why there was tectonic plates and all the other things I learned in seventh grade science, right? The bodies of land that were the places where the water was dried up. It's a weird image, a weird idea where God was creating and then he had to say, stop. This is how Reish Lakish understands the idea that God had to say, die, enough. As if he was creating, specifically regarding the water, and he had to put an end to it, as if it needed to be stopped. And if he wouldn't have stopped it, it would have kept going, and too much of it would have been bad because there would have been no land. This is how Rav Tzedek in source number 5 explains this idea. Ukmosha Amar Rebbe, this is from Parshas Bereishis in the Sefer Pri Tzadok. Ukmosha Amar Rebbe Rabbunim, Rav Simcha Bunim Yipshischa, also the fathers of Chassidus, amazing in the Kutzker world. He was one of the Rebbeim of the Kutzker Rebbe of the Gur dynasty, one of the greatest thinkers in modern Jewish history. The Shem Zem Arames Al Masha Amru Anu Shamarti Lolam Dai, as we say in the Gemara, Shahaya Ha'ola Marchiv Vaholich Ad Shagar Baruch Hashem Baruch Hu Vehemido. God stopped the world from being created, and God wanted it to stay the way it was. Hainu, this is how he explains. Ki Habriya Haisa Kidei Sheyakiru Hanivraim Elohu So Yisparach Shmo. The creation, the purpose of creation, was in order so that we, the creations, could recognize godliness in this world, His godliness. The Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, die, he said to the world, die, why she'ein tzrichim lehis ma'seach od yoser. It was as if God was saying, after he created the world, or as the world was finished being created, he said, stop. I don't want you to have to search more and to be more confused and have a more difficult time than you already have to find me in the world. Now think about it this way, and this is the way that I was originally explaining the Rav Tzedek before I ever saw it inside. What existed before the world was created? chaos. Impossible to understand what that means, right? Because we only understand chaos within the world. But you're right, because that's what the Torah said, tohu vavohu, which some sort of chaos. It's very unclear how a human being is meant to conceptualize what that is. But I have a different answer for you, actually, even though it kind of goes against that phrase, tohu vavohu. There was one thing in existence before the world was created, and it was God. At least that's all I know that existed. God existed before the world, and if there was no world, and what I mean by the world, I mean universe, not just planet Earth. If there was nothing created yet, so then all there was God. Now what happened when he created? He created light and dark. So now what was in the world? There was now God and light and dark. And then he created Shemayim and Aretz. He created the sky and the land. And then he created the waters. And then he created the grass and the trees and the mountains and the valleys. And then he created the celestial beings, the sun and the moon and the star. And then more and more things came into existence in addition to God. Which means that before there was existence, it was extremely clear. If God would have created like one guy right then, it would have been very hard to miss the fact that God is in the world, right? Because there is only God. But what God did was create all these other things. And as Rav Tzadok, who was quoting Rav Simcha Bunim, points out, the purpose of those things is to appreciate and to recognize God through those creations. The problem is the more and more creations that were made, the more things besides God existed. And what is dangerous that could happen is one could look at those things and instead of seeing God through them, could see them instead of God and say, oh, there's a tree. Well, God's somewhere, something else. This is just a tree. But if the point of seeing of the world is to see God through the tree, then there needs to be a delicate balance between the creations of the world and the ability to connect them back to God. So what happened at the very end of creation? God said, if I create more, there will be too much in the world, and it will be almost impossible for people to look at that world and connect it back to me. So I want to stop it right here. 6 days is enough. And this is the perfect amount of things in the world that will allow someone, if they think hard enough, to find me in this world. And it won't be too easy, but it also won't be too hard. And if I would have had a seventh day of creation or an eighth day of creation, there would have been too much stuff and people, I would have been totally lost. This is what it means in the name of Rav Simcha Bunim, Shamarti La'olam Dai. When God said enough to the world, it's he wanted people to recognize God in this world through the creation. And if he wouldn't have stopped, it would have been too much expansion of material world for us to see God. And he ends, I skipped a little, and he ends this paragraph. He says, Umamela, and after God did this, Kishahikir Avraham Avinu, Alav Hashalom, Mehabriya Elokuso, when Avraham Avinu stood outside and looked at the sun and the moon and the stars and tried to think a little, did some meditation, and said, what's going on here? He arrived at the unbelievable revolutionary idea that there is a creator. At that moment, what does Rav Tzadok say? Memela hayaroa melech malchei amlachim omid alav. At that moment, when he recognized there must be a creator, it's as if God was, poof, right in front of him. And it wasn't necessarily that God appeared to him, but it's that the world displayed God right in front of him once he arrived at that conclusion that God existed and that God created everything. Now, this, I want to suggest, is a very fancy and interesting, and this is why the Dechel Machaneh Ephraim brought this up, is the idea of Yira. The idea of Yira is, I want to have just the right amount of structure and limitation to what I have so that I can properly see the purpose in what I'm doing. Do you see how I arrived at that? God created a world with a specific purpose so that the creations of the world will be able to recognize God through creation, through the world. And if God expanded the world to be more than what it is, that searching process for God within creation would be too difficult, and people would lose sight of the purpose of creation, and the whole point of creating everything would be lost. because God would have expanded his creation to be too much and too complicated. So the idea of God limiting creation to be exactly the way it is right now is what enabled the purpose of that existence to be clear to everyone. And is that feature of God, which is why we're working in Kabbalistic terms, this was God's attribute of Yira, of holding back. Saying die enough and no more is the attribute of Gvura, of Yira, of holding of back, of creating a kli, a receptacle, a container. And all a container is, if you think about it, it's if you think about a glass of water, the glass is simply containing the water in a certain way so that if there was no container, it would just expand out and lose all structure. And really the purpose of the water, which is to drink, would be lost because it would just be drops of water on the ground. So the glass is what allows the water to be used for the purpose that you want it to be used. It's that container. This is what the Degel Machaneh Ephraim is speaking about when he discusses Yira, how Yira contains wisdom. Knowing lots of stuff is great, but knowing too much and not having it structured and contained in a specific way through fear of God and understanding, wait, how should I be using this knowledge? Then that knowledge will overflow and begin to lose its purpose of what knowledge is meant to be for. Why did God put knowledge in your head? Without the fear of God, that knowledge will be distorted and used for evil. In other terms, it's really the idea of, you know what, maybe it's not. I'm gonna hold back on that. I'm not going to say it. Okay. Let me just continue a little more on the Degel Machaneh Ephraim, because he wants to bring this point back into the story in the Parsha that we were saying. Let's skip to the second underlined part of this of that first paragraph. Ulachain, in source number two, Yesh Lomar, one could say, Yireh Nikres Bias. One can suggest that in the context of what we were explaining, that Yireh is the idea of containing wisdom, of containing knowledge, and placing it in the right amount and in the right context to be used for its real, genuine purpose, so then fear of God is as if it's like a house. It houses knowledge. A house being a structure that contains things inside of it. It is a bias. Al yedei shehu tzimtzum ugvul, the kli. It is retreating. It's something that brings something in. As opposed to just being a huge field, it brings together certain specific things inside of it. It is a boundary, literally like a fenced-in property. And it is a kli, it is a vessel where you could do things inside of the house as opposed to outside. V'zeyesh lomar perish ha-pasuk. And this, according to the Degel Machaneh Ephraim, is an understanding. But again, he says, al derech remez. This is not the simple understanding. This is one of the deeper messages of this pasuk. Vayas lahem batim. Now, it seems he's referring to, he's understanding this phrase, and he made them houses, referring to God making the midwives houses. Hainu, what does this mean? Ki yiru hamyaldos eselohim, that the midwives feared God. Vezachu liyira, and they merited the attribute of fear of God. Vayas lahem batim. Hainu, shezachu liyira hanikra bias. Vinaase kli ugvul vitsimsum kederach hayira hanisker leel v'havei. Through their successful internalization of the fact that God exists in the world. And if you think about what was going on here, what conflict they were dealing with, it was very simple, if you think about it. They had a flesh and blood king giving them one command, and they had the king of all kings that they knew had a different will and desire for them. The king of Egypt was saying, kill the male Jewish children that are born. And the king of all kings was saying, if I'm real in this world, and I'm the creator of the world, and I chose the Jewish people, and you are my children, of course it is my will that those children are not killed. And they had to choose Who do we fear more? Who do we understand as the higher power that we need to follow, whose will we need to carry out? And the significance of the attribute of fear in this story is that they made a choice to acknowledge that it is God's will that is more important than really anyone else's, including literally the king of the known world at that time, the king of Egypt. And that's why specifically fear is used in this context, to understand that it is fearing God that allows them to make the difficult choice of going against the will of Paro. And their reward, and it's almost like, the Degel Machane Ephraim, it's not even that their reward, but a simple consequence of them fearing God was Vayas Lahem Batim, and they were turned into houses. Vayas Lahem, it's almost as if he made them into houses. It's not that he made for them houses, but Vayas Lahem, he made to them Batim, houses. They were now receptacles of fear of God. And the concept of a bias is Yira, as he explained, that they were the manifestation of what it means to be contained, to have the attribute of Yira in the world. Odiesh Lefarish. You know what? One second. Fine. You know what? I'm not going to mention that now. Fine. So they were the attribute of Yira, and as a result, the houses that's referred to in the Pasuk are not physical houses, but actually referred to the midwives themselves, who were houses who embodied the idea of Yira themselves. Now, what's interesting is, this is a very nice, beautiful idea, but where is this coming from? What does this have to do with our lives? What message here are we meant to take from here, from this story? Okay, I mean, really what I basically said is, these women were told to do something that wasn't right. They were commanded by a king. They had fear of God. They went against the king based on their beliefs. And the Pasuk wants to point out, al derech remes, through the way of hinting, that God saw that they were God-fearing people, and the attribute of fear literally like shined from them. They were ki'ilu, they were like houses themselves that embodied the idea of containing and structuring our world. What's interesting is, this idea is found in several different places, important places in our life, and as I'll finish, I'll show you, it's one of the most difficult things to relate to in this world that we live in the generation that we're in, and really one of the most difficult things to successfully incorporate into our lives. A beautiful thought that I heard a long time ago was that, as you know, the Hebrew word for man is ish, and the word for woman, or really wife, is isha. And if you think about those two words, they have the letters aleph and shin. Ish is aleph yud shin, and isha is aleph shin hey. And the only difference between them is that the man has the word yud in it, the letter yud in it, and the woman has the letter hey in it. But besides that, they're ish. Now there's a beautiful idea about they're fire, and they bring together the yud and the hey, the yud from the ish and the hey and the isha, and it brings together God's name, yud and hey. But I heard a beautiful, also Kabbalistic thought, that each letter represents a different idea, a different spiritual entity, or a different image, a different element, that's the word, in this world. And the letter that represents godliness or spirituality is the letter Yud. The reason is because spirituality is not physical in any way. There is no physical aspect to spirituality. So the challenge when trying to put a symbol on a piece of paper to represent something that is not physical, how do you do that? How do I show someone what something spiritual looks like if there is nothing to see? Well, the answer is you do the smallest possible amount of physical image to show that it's really not about the physical thing. The whole point here is the spiritual thing. So the Yud, the smallest letter, that's really the smallest mark you can really make to represent something, is spirituality. Now think about what a He is. A He is a small Yud that is enclosed by essentially a resh, but enclosed by something like a house. It's as if it's housed by something. Now, I heard a beautiful idea that when it comes to a male's spiritual essence, we simply do. That's why we have all the mitzvos to do. What our goal in the world is, what our purpose in the world is to do and to create more spirituality in our lives and in the world, our lives will be judged based on how much we do, and that we're chayev to do everything, we're obligated. Every time we come to a holiday or a mitzvah, everything, we always have to learn about what are we chayev to do, what are we obligated to do, and it's all about do, do, do. Spirituality in our world is something that's constantly expanding. More action, more results, more spirituality as a result of what we do in our lives. It's something that's constantly expanding, like the story in the Gemara of the water constantly expanding. Now the problem is, if something is constantly expanding and doing more and it doesn't have proper containment, it can lead to distortion. It could lead to too much. Too much is not a good thing. Right, Jerry Seinfeld, he just showed up so I could mention him. Jerry Seinfeld, in his back in the day when he had his awesome HBO special that everyone had a CD of because it was really good, talks about the very big issue of when you buy milk in the supermarket and then you come home and you realize you already had milk and now you have too much milk and now you don't know what to do with all the milk because it's going to go bad and then you have to like bring cats in and feed it. So he talks about the problem of too much milk. Milk is great, but if you have too much milk, you have a big problem on your hands. Lahavdil, majorly lahavdil. When we're talking about spirituality, it's good, but if you go off the deep end, if you're if it encompasses who you are, if it goes way too much overboard, then it's actually not a good thing. It needs to be contained. Well, God created a solution to that problem, and her name is Eve, or every woman in the world, which is the embodiment of holding back or creating a structure. It's not a coincidence that the house is typically the woman's domain. I know it's politically incorrect nowadays, but it's a well-known idea from a long time ago that when the Torah talks about a bias, oftentimes it says the word bias in the Torah, and it's actually referring to one's wife. That one's wife equals one's house. And it's not just that in the politically incorrect way, they're the ones that clean up the house and make food in the house and the house in the house. It's that they are the structure of the family. You guys may not know this practically in your lives yet, although you grew up in a house. So you may understand as someone who is a member of a household that more often than not, the woman is the one who understands how everything needs to be done in the house and to keep things in order in the house, and even if they're working, or even especially if they're working, because guys can be working and still not know. I still don't know where most things are in my house. They are the ones that appreciate and have a special, orientation towards structure. They understand structure better than men. There's research done about how they're better at multitasking. What does that mean? They're better at compartmentalizing in their head, putting structure to different places and things in their life, different tasks. That's something that men don't naturally know how to do as well as women. Think about that concept. We don't naturally know how to structure ourselves as well as women do. And that's the idea of creating structure to an element that expands. That is the beauty of marriage, that you have the beauty of going and doing and acting and creating more in the world, and it's coupled with, literally, with someone who understands where and when is the right time to expand and to create more and to do more. Yira is really what makes that spiritual life successful. And without it, it will likely not be successful, be unstable. This is why we have psukim like Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem from Tehillim. The beginning of all wisdom is knowledge of, is fear of God, is understanding that it's not just about how much I know, but it's about knowing how to use it. There's a famous phrase in the business world, which is, let's not work harder, let's work smarter. Right? Having more knowledge is not necessarily going to enable us to do better work. Using that knowledge in a more efficient way, in a more effective way, is going to create a more successful business. Working smarter is understanding how to contain that knowledge, and even to know what knowledge is unnecessary and shouldn't be used, and what knowledge to contain and structure and use in the right way. Working smarter. That's the idea of Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. Now, what's interesting is, and this I'll finish up. Yira is basically a lost art. And here's where I get really politically incorrect. But it's okay, because guess what? If God thinks it's politically correct, so I'm on his team. Yira is the idea that there are lines that need to be drawn. A structure, and this is also a very important idea when it comes to marriage. A structure, if you think about it, is something that keeps the things inside of it in and keeps the things outside of it out. That's the idea of a structure. Without walls, you have the ability for things outside of it and inside it to be integrated with each other. When you build four walls and you make a structure, it encloses what's inside of it and keeps out what's outside of it. If you think about it, yira is something that contains what you have inside, and it doesn't let what is outside come in. In the story of the midwives in Paro, they contained their fear of God, their commitment to the Jewish people, and didn't let the outside influence of even another very powerful human being mess with their faith and their commitment to God. It was that yira that helped them contain that belief. The problem is that in our world, we live in a culture and a society that worships more, the idea of more, without necessarily appreciating structure at all. Sometimes not even at all, and other times as an inferior quality, inferior to the idea of excess. I can't help but bring up mobile technology as the prime example. It's simply it's something that's basically at the forefront of the modern world at this point. And if you think about what it is it's devices that allow you to access more information at faster speeds, in more locations, and more times, in each growing year, and day, month, and year. We have 3G, 4G, 4G LTE, they're working on 5G. What they're working on is trying to get you to use as little time and effort as possible to access more and more information, whether that's communicating with a person, or that's accessing knowledge. The idea of the internet, which is an invention that existed as a way of accessing knowledge from one point, from one location, even though that knowledge exists in another location. It was revolutionary when it was created. It was actually created for the government to use, and then we all started using it and said, hey, this is great. Now we could watch cats in dresses, like do dances. Isn't the internet great? But the idea is that we worship now, and it's not necessarily on purpose, because this was a great tool. The amount of good that has been brought into the world through this tool called the internet, called mobile technology, is should not be understated. But the idea of accessing more information and acquiring knowledge without boundaries is dangerous. Look at how dangerous the world is now because of the ability of anyone, anywhere, to access information. Yikes. And not only that, but it's teaching us that it's not so important to limit ourselves when it comes to this. And children are growing up in a world where they have access to things faster and quicker and earlier than ever before, and they're not taught of the value of, yeah, but there's a point where you should stop. And Be'ezrat Hashem, when you have kids, you'll see for yourself, and I hope Mashiach comes before long so that we don't have to all deal with what the next generation is going to have, because they don't understand what stop is, because they're living in a world where there is simply more everywhere. We live socially speaking in a world that is constantly trying to tolerate more. It used to be that it wasn't okay to marry whatever gender you want. Now, if you even hint at the fact that it's not okay to marry whoever, whatever type of person you want, like, you are the most terrible person that ever existed. How can you possibly, in 2015, for a few more days, ever even consider the fact that someone shouldn't be allowed to marry whoever they want? The idea is that we're taking down walls that were built up. We're taking down structure that was placed by the same country in the same society at some point, and it is now crumbling down. I'm pretty sure that at some point in the not-so-distant future, our society's structure will simply say, as long as you don't hurt anyone, just do whatever you want. Right? That's basically where we're headed. We're headed because once we tear down a wall of you're allowed to do whatever you want in the area of marriage, and soon you're allowed to do whatever you want in the area of self-medication and drugs, as long as it's not clearly hurting you immediately, right? So this same system is simply going to go to every area of society, right? If why am I allowed to do whatever I want with marriage and not with other stuff? So we're simply moving towards a world that allows you to do whatever you want, however much of it, however, in whatever way you want. And really the only value that we're not crossing a line with is harming yourself or other people. We're losing the structure. That's what's happening. And I found it hard to ignore the fact that one of the people running for president, although not that I have such strong opinions about this, but one of like the biggest lines of one of these crazy people running for president is he's obsessed with building a wall. I'm assuming you know who I'm talking about. And his whole thing is we'll build a big, beautiful wall and we'll, because we need a country without borders is not a country. That's what he kept saying. And you know what's funny? Everyone thinks he's out of his mind. Now, he is out of his mind. He very much is out of his mind, and I do not think he should run any country, right? But what's great, and it's important to understand and appreciate and recognize, is that this mentality of building a wall is so the opposite of the society and specifically the culture that he's running for president to try and manage, that even if his argument is valid, which by the way it kind of is, even though that's maybe not the first thing to bring up if you're running for a president in this climate, it's a valid argument. But the idea, the image of building a big brick wall, just the look in your head, if you imagine what I'm going to do when the president build a wall, is so the opposite of the way people are thinking in the country that he's trying to run, that there's no way he could succeed with that unless it's just so crazy that people just want to see more of him, which is what people think is why he's getting such great ratings or high polls, because he's just so outlandish. But that's what's fascinating to me. The wall thing is so against the mentality of the American people, because we are being flooded with the idea of don't build walls, break down walls, break down barriers, don't have structure, allow people all over to do whatever, whenever, because as long as we have more ability to do more and to speak with more people and to relate to more people, that is better than having structure and holding sacred what each individual has, or what entire groups have, or communities have, or nationalities, or ethnicities. We kind of celebrate them, but then we kind of say, don't make sure you're not getting in the way of anyone else. Or make sure you're not too different than us, because we all have to be equal. Right? If you worship everything, or if you care about everything, then you might also just be caring about nothing. This is the idea of marriage, by the way, of Kedushin. Holiness is something that means it's separate. Kedushin means actually separation. I'll go into that another time. So, as you can see, it's a very difficult thing, even just because it's hard to appreciate how much our culture and society impacts our way of thinking. And we live in a westernized culture here as well. That the idea of Yira flies against much of this. The idea of, just thinking, like, I think it's T-Mobile, but it's probably other carriers as well, is like their famous plan is the unlimited everything plan. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. The unlimited everything plan. And I think they know really well is the thing that Americans want more than anything else is unlimited everything. That's basically as good as it gets for a standard person, is the idea of accessing an unlimited amount of stuff or information and an unlimited time span. I want to be able to, all the time, access everything. That's what I want to be able to do when I'm on the toilet, when I'm out eating dinner, when I'm in my pajamas, when I'm in class. I want to access everything in an unlimited way, in an unlimited amount of time. That is essentially the opposite of what Yira is. Where God exists is not in everything. It's in specific ways, in specific times, in specific structures. The way Kedusha works is that it's structured. Holidays is the idea that holiness can be contained in time at certain times and not other times. There's the idea of chol, of mundane time, and then holier times. The idea of marriage is that there is a certain relationship that I have that separates myself from other relationships. The idea of Eretz Yisrael is that there is a certain location in the world that is holier and that's separate from other places in the world. Yira, fear of God, is what allows us to create structure and bring holiness into our lives. Hopefully. And we need a big bracha for this one. Because again, what we're doing is something that's extremely unnatural in the world that we live in. We'll take the lessons of the mialdos of these midwives who had one seemingly normal story that wasn't too crazy at the time. It was definitely a matter of self-sacrifice. The story began and ended in a matter of a few psukim. It was clearly not the main event of this week's parsha or even the entire story. But the message is that perhaps in order to bring Jewish people into the world, in order to appreciate what it is to have a Jewish nation, and perhaps it's this story which is the foundation of the Jewish people becoming big and strong, as the Pasuk says at the end of in Pasuk Chafa, Itav Elokim Lamialdos Vayirev Ha'am Vayatzmu Ma'od. As a result of this Yira of these midwives, the nation became big and strong. It is holding on to what we consider to be sacred and important in the face of other values that exist clearly beyond, outside of what our values are. It is being able to say, I understand that there's a very important king or a very important message out there or a very trendy or popular thing out there, however it manifests itself, that seems to should have a heavy influence on my life and is heavily influencing most other people in the world. but I build my walls and I structure myself the way I feel I should. I have values according to the way I set up my spiritual life. And that structure is based on God's word. So hopefully Hashem should help us to really set up that bias for ourselves, become a bias, become what the embodiment of a home, a structure, a place that holds what's inside of it sacred and that keeps the unwanted value systems outside of it. And through that, we will also become many and become strong and bring on the final end to this exile with the coming of Mashiach.